Well, hello, 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 everyone. This is Mr. Chucky tonight, and we've got tonight's suggestion and tonight's little fun thing. Driven in all the way from Fire Island. In fact, I was talking to Dickie on the way in, and I said, by God, Dickie, this is getting to be more fun every night, and every time one turns around, things are turning out better. Well, here's tonight's little fun suggestion brought to you as a special public service of WOR and all the gang. There's so many nice, sweet people here at WOR. I was just talking to Dickie the other day. I said, oh, well, that doesn't make a difference. We don't have much time, so I might as well get right on with it here. For the water lover who is stranded far from the beach or the pool, F.A.O. Schwartz. And, you know, by George, I remember as a little boy, F.A.O. Schwartz played such an important part in my life. F.A.O. Schwartz, for the water lover, has introduced, and I want you to listen very carefully because I know that many of you are going to want to take advantage of this new fun thing. They've introduced the water wiggle. Isn't that lovely? I want to repeat again. It's the water wiggle. Hey, George. The water wiggle. This little gadget in the form of an animal head attaches to a garden hose and chases the people around the lawn. All the while, it's doing its watering. Isn't that fun? It's chasing you around. Oh, Dickie, get away, will you? I don't have time for that sort of thing at this hour. Right, it's fun. Little fun thing. Well, this is Mr. Chucky. And we've come all the way from the island with tonight's fun suggestion. We'll head on back to the island and say hello to the gang out there. Goodbye, goodbye to all of you. It's been fun. Well, rick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick. Hold it there, hold it there. Stop it. Cut it out! Shut up! People. They're not loud and not a moment's rest. I don't need this sort of thing. I don't have to come in here and do this, you know that? Well, maybe I do. Second thought. Well, you don't have to listen, do you? God's sakes, you don't. Well, you don't have to act like that. Cut it out.
There, Mr. Shepherd, I was talking to my husband, Charles, the other day, and I said, I certainly like it when that young man tells about the stories of when he was a boy in Indiana, but I can't stand it when you get loud and play all those funny records and make those terrible, repulsive sounds. Now, take a word from the wise. Get wise to yourself, Mr. Shepherd. Get with it and do the thing you do best. Tell stories about when you were a boy. I was telling Charles the other day. I said, Charles, by George, there's nobody that tells stories about when he was a boy better than Mr. Shepherd. And I was telling Charles the other day, if Mr. Nixon is coming on here all the way from California to become a New Yorker, I think that Mr. Shepherd, on the other hand, signed an ex-WOR listener. I believe that John Gambling...
Cut it out! It's getting more ridiculous every minute. Have you noticed that? A little animal chasing you around the lawn. For adults yet, you know, this is for adults. You can get a little tiny wolf's head that attaches to a hose. Well, now I'd like to just take this thing here for a minute. Now, if you think I'm being funny, I'd like to repeat once again. For the water lover, you can get this little thing called a water wiggle. That's the gadget in the form of an animal head, and it attaches to a garden hose and chases the people around the lawn while also watering it. I like that sort of multiple function. I think that's a truly functional device because we all really underneath it all want to be chased across the lawn by some kind of a thing. Oh, yes, we do. Don't think for a minute now. When you're walking along somewhere in the dark and you have a feeling that there's something out there in the privet hedges, that thing that's out there, that thing that everybody suspects is underneath all the overshoes in the closet at 2 o'clock in the morning. Excuse me. That thing that you hear between the houses once in a while. You know the thing, Ed. Of course you know the thing. We've worked for him for years. But, the thing, you know what I mean? The thing? The thing that everybody's afraid of, you know? They play the Hogan Twangers, and they beat the drums, and they blow the whistles, and they write tracks about it, and the whole thing. Well, this is a very well-founded thing. I think the F.A.O. Schwartz people have earned something good. Do you realize that in the very earliest days, do you know where the lawn springs from? Might as well tell you that story. That the lawn originally was a functional thing. It was a clearing that a guy had around his house so that when the things that came out of the bushes that were about to bite him could be seen, you see. That's right. That's right. And he cleared around his house this flat space. Now, this was many, many centuries ago, the first place. Yes, thinking hard there. The first thing he did was just clear it off, you see. And then along came his wife or somebody he was living with or something. He says, well, why don't you, you know, this is, looks terrible out there. All, you know, the woods are over there, and here we got the sand and the stickers. Well, let's do something. So the next thing they did was to grow grass around there, you see. And the grass kept the sand down. So it didn't blow in the house and get in the pies and in the shoes and all that stuff. Well, that was the beginning of the lawn to keep the animals away. And now we've come full circle where the lawn has ceased to have that function. Now, there aren't many wolves hiding in the bushes outside of the houses in Westchester, you know? They just aren't there. But the lawns remain. The lawns definitely remain. And so now F.A.O. Schwartz has brought it all the way back, and you can get a small wolf's head or a small crocodile head. I said, this is one of the nuttiest developments of our society. Now, about 5 years ago, I made a prediction on the air, which I thought, of course, was just one of those nutty things you do for a show. I made a prediction that eventually people would pay to have a tiger chase them down the Grand Concourse. Yeah, I mean, a tiger that has a stop thing in it, a little transistor tiger that would stop somewhere, so they wouldn't quite get you, but it would be nip and tuck for a while. And here it's coming to pass, you know, it's that little thing there. And the beauty of it all is, of course, that, well, I mean, there's no point in delving too deeply into this. Let's all admit that the idea of, or you can also, for the more slobbish among us, you can get a Donald Duck head. Be chased around the lawn by Donald Duck. I suppose Minnie Mouse is available. And I kind of like the idea of a little plastic Jackie that chases you around the lawn and waters the privet hedge while doing it. That might be fun. And, yes. I suppose, too, if you're really a right-winger, you can get a little plastic head of Khrushchev that chases you around the darkness out there while you're watering your lawn and bangs his little plastic shoe once in a while on the geraniums, you know, and threatens to annihilate you with an A-bomb, all the while squirting at the lawn. It's the best of two possible worlds. Speaking of the best of all possible worlds, I don't know how to approach this one. This kind of bothers me here since it's, you know, it's late at night. I don't know how much you can take. But the other day I'm listening to one of these lady-type shows. You know, the ladies are being interviewed, see? And this particular lady was interviewing some other ladies who were husbands of ball players. Well, this lady interviewer seemed to be of the persuasion that ladies should attend the ball game with as much enthusiasm and pizzazz. And of course, then she goes on to produce the typical lady misinformation about baseball. She says, the other day, I'm talking about Joe DiMaggio to my friends, and somebody mentioned Dominic. Who ever heard Dominic DiMaggio? What's a Dominic DiMaggio? Who ever heard of Dominic DiMaggio? Oh, yeah, I'm so ball fan there, and immediately all the overload relays kick over, and I get teed off. For your information, baby, Dominic DiMaggio was a better center fielder than Joe DiMaggio. Now, here in New York, that may be tantamount to saying something almost sacrilegious, if not practically treacherous. But nevertheless, as a fielder, Dominic DiMaggio had a lot to offer that Joe never had. But on the other hand, Joe was a better hitter, and furthermore, he lived in New York. Which, you know, you can't help it when you're in New York. If Joe DiMaggio had played for Cleveland, you would never have heard of him. He would have been just another good ball player. I just wonder what kind of a folk hero Al Kaline would be if he played for the Yankees today. I can just imagine Mel Allen blowing his stack every afternoon three times an inning over Kaline. But that's not the thing I'm here to report. What I am to report is something even more subtle and sinister than that. This lady from the Mets, there's a lady there, she says the Mets have plans afoot for when they open their new stadium to have large sections of the stadium set aside for group viewing, which is to say the theater party curse is coming to New York in the baseball world. Can't you imagine? Today's doubleheader, the Washington Senators. Oh, wait, that's right. They're in the American League. Excuse me. Today's doubleheader, the Milwaukee Braves versus the New York Mets, are sponsored by the Babylon chapter of the B'nai B'rith. All of you B'nai B'rith members today are being made welcome by the management of the New York Mets. Welcome, B'nai B'rith. And all the ladies from the B'nai B'rith start cheering Eddie Crane Pool. And then there would be a brief pause around the seventh inning, and the announcer would say,
Your attention, please. Tomorrow afternoon's game, featuring the Dodgers and the New York Mets, will be held in connection with and conjunction with a special party by the Benedict Arnold chapter of the DAR. Yes, the ladies of the DAR, the Benedict Arnold chapter, are sponsoring tomorrow afternoon's game of the Dodgers and the New York Mets. Welcome, DAR.
Well, of course, the natural outcropping of this is very early in the spring. There will be previews for the various lady ticket buyers. And they will have to look at all the rookies. I'm sure that the ladies will have to pass on all the rookies. Oh, yes. Do you think this is funny? It's coming. Believe me. Speaking of idiocy, this is WOR AM and FM, New York. No, it's truly coming. Now, I suppose you are aware that the theater party has already taken over the world of bowling. It's almost impossible to get into a bowling alley. You know that. Oh, didn't you know that? That whole nights are taken over by various clubs. And you just can't get into a bowling. For heaven's sakes, where are you? Well, now I once, one of the saddest afternoons I ever spent was an afternoon in a Broadway show cast before the Broadway show was put on Broadway, before it even went out on the road, in fact, before it even started rehearsal. This Broadway show was being auditioned by the lady ticket buyers of the various ladies' clubs of Westchester County, Dutchess County, New Jersey, and the Bronx. And it was one of those afternoons where I suddenly became aware of a new world that was coming in. And all these people were professional entertainers and good ones. There were a lot of fine writers involved. And the producer was there, and all these large ladies with creaking corsets sat and passed on a Broadway show that was about to be done. Now, here's the real hooker of it. If these ladies hadn't passed on the show, it would never have gotten to Broadway. Are you aware of this? Aren't you aware of it at all? The word gets out immediately among backers that the lady ticket buyers for the various ladies' clubs, the various organizations, did not like the show. And forget it. They desert the ship like rats. Now, the thing to point out, of course, is that these are all ladies. Remember that. And it's so funny to hear people say women don't have any power in this world. Wow, they have far more power. I mean, that's real power, where they can affect an entire art form, literally. They can just decide that it's not going to happen, and that's the end of it. It doesn't happen. And I found that people have a kind of a sort of a a schizoid attitude towards this thing. You know, they on the one hand, they seem to think it's a good idea because they can sell a lot of seats that way. You know, if you get the ladies of the B'nai B'rith or if you get the ladies of the PTA from Westport behind you, you're in business, you know, and you can go all the way. But they on the other hand, they deplore it. I suspect. Well, you know, speaking of the Mets, as long as we're on that subject of the Mets, I'm afraid it's going to have a little baseball in it, this show, ladies. But it isn't the kind of baseball you think. I'm going to make a prediction, and the prediction roughly runs something like this. To begin with, I don't believe that most of the fans of the Mets care anything about baseball at all. I don't think they're baseball fans in any sense of the word. I can remember the early Giant fans. Now, the Dodger fans were baseball fans, but the Giant fans weren't. Most of them were a very chic crowd. I mean, the Tallulah Bank head crowd, you know. And they loved to sit around to a chair and say, "Oh, my dear, I just love the way Millot plays first. He's just the most darling person." Well, I was talking to Casey the other day, and it's that kind of social, superficial, hogwashy, phony attitude, you know, a kind of a chic thing. Well, the Mets have gathered a lot of that crew together. They're all out there. But the thing that I think primarily sets the Mets apart is that the Mets are a true social phenomenon. I think that 150 years from now, when people are cataloging this time, they're going to talk about the Mets. They will. They'll have to talk about the Mets because the Mets are part of the genuine age of the demonstration. Now, I believe that the Met fans, a large number of them, are demonstrators without a cause. It's a difficult thing to be a demonstrator in this world when you don't have any guts. Oh, it's very difficult. I mean, now a real demonstrator, he loves getting hit on the head by police clubs. You know, that's a kind of a wonderful feeling. There's a wonderful feeling of martyrdom. You know, there's nothing that makes you deeper and warmer and feel greater than to be known as a martyr. You know, even to yourself. You know, to know that you're right and everybody says you're wrong. It's a wonderful feeling. Well, the Met fans, on the other hand, are large numbers of them. I've gone out and I've watched them. You can see by their actions, as a psychologist watches this thing, he'd be fascinated, that the sign carrying, the horn blowing, the walking up, they're walking up and down aisles at the Mets fan out there at Polo Grounds, incessantly walking around out there. That is the most, and very rarely looking at the ball game. That's the fascinating part of it. They're incessantly walking up and down the aisles and getting signs out and getting bottles out to throw and working on cans and all the while the ball team is playing. So, you know, they're out there. Once in a while something happens, they hear a hit. Out goes the bottles and stuff. They don't know what it's for. They just throw out there. Well, as an old practiced baseball goer-tour, I can tell the sound of a crowd that knows baseball from the sound of a crowd who doesn't. My old man used to have a slogan. He had a slogan, "Never go to a ball game on Sunday or Ladies' Day." That was his slogan. He used to turn purple when we'd go out for Ladies' Day. And in fact, listening to the ball games over the years, I could always tell by the kind of screams and hollering that went on whether it was a bunch of Cub Scouts out there in free, you know, the Knot Hole gang, they always talk about that crowd, or a large group of ladies back of first base. You hear more screaming over foul tips, and all that yelling and hollering around. And eventually, of course, I suspect that the Met fans are in for some very, very dismal surprises, as well as the Met management. The Met management is in for even more interesting surprises. Do you know that during the days of the Giants, you know, they always talk about the fanatical fandom that the Giants had. They always they weep bitter tears. Well, the better the Giants got, the more the fans stayed away. Until finally, in the early 1950s, when the Giants won a couple of pennants, they drew less people than the Mets did in their first year. Are you aware of that? Well, the whole point was that the Giant fans did not want a winner, just as the Met fans do not want a winner, because, believe me, it is very hard to be a demonstrator for You know, for a winner, you know. What are you going to demonstrate? What do you do, you know? It's like demonstrating for the Yankees. This is ridiculous. And it has very little to do with the underdog. People keep saying on the air, the reason that the Mets are a big favorite is because they're the underdog. Oh, why is it then that talk about underdogs? Have you watched the Washington Senators? Let me tell you, the Washington Senators, oh, that is the saddest ball team I have seen since the Calumet City Indians gave up the ghost. I talk about a sad ball club, the poor old Washington Senators, and nobody is screaming about underdog with them. They're just a rotten ball team, that's all. So I'm not a believer in this underdog theory. It just doesn't hold water because there have been countless underdogs in baseball. Now, a good example of an underdog. Now, I'll tell you a true example of an underdog making the scene. And hardly anybody saying anything about it. If the underdog theory held, they'd be going out of their skulls. The Chicago Cubs. They're a true underdog team. Because here they are, they're up in the first division, you know, they're fighting all the way down the line. And who cares? You know, there are a few guys up in Chicago yelling. But I don't hold with this underdog theory at all. I believe that what is in New York will eventually be in the rest of the country. And New York, we're seeing the beginnings of a thing here where sports, in a way, have become a blood thing, a true blood sport. You know what a blood sport is? We don't have many blood sports in America. But a blood sport is like bullfighting is a blood sport, of course. It's the most obvious blood sport. There are others. Cockfighting is another one. These are sports where the excitement is in the excitement of a kill. Now, it's intriguing to watch. Have you ever been at a cockfight? I'll never forget being at one time in the South. Oh, yes. The people who have backed a rooster are as fanatic. As soon as the rooster starts losing, he's starting to lose, you know, you'll see them screaming for him to be killed. Now, that kind of is a paradox, isn't it? You'd say, well, why do you want the favorite? No, not a bit of it. There's something else going on there. And so I have a feeling that the New York Mets, that a Met fan feels a deep sense of satisfaction when the Mets win, as long as they have lost a lot of games around it. Just like a real profound demonstrator of one kind or another, he always feels good when there's a slight gain, as long as he has a sense of martyrdom along with it. Now, I believe that when the Mets move out, Ed, out to this new stadium, I suspect they're going to lose a great percentage of their original fans. Not because of the distance that you're going to have to travel out there, but because of the frame itself. The Polo Grounds is a kind of off-Broadway theater of baseball. It's very unofficial compared to the Yankee Stadium. You know, you're like 14 miles away. In the best seat in the stadium, you're half again further away from the ball players as the best seat in the Polo Grounds. You can make no contact with ball players out at Yankee Stadium. Hardly any contact at all is possible. And yet, out in the Polo Grounds, you can sit in far right field, and you're only about 275 feet. You're looking right down the first baseman's neck, you know. He's sitting out there. And there is a sense of being enclosed there. Like, we've got this little world, and it's our little world. And it's sort of raggle-taggle and battered. And it's like going down to an off-Broadway theater. Have you ever seen an off-Broadway show taken uptown and put on the Broadhurst or the Alvin or put on Madison Square Garden? All of a sudden, it's Deadsville. It really doesn't make the scene. Part of the charm of going to an off-Broadway theater and being part of that is this little closeness, this togetherness. We're all together in this little cellar, and we're plotting. We're all plotting against the Dodgers. Well, you take these guys and you put them in a jazzy multi-billion-dollar stadium where you're sitting way off there, you know, and you've got the concrete all around you and the pillars and beautiful place. Immediately, they become something else again. And I suspect that the thing they're going to become is just another mediocre ball club. And then the Mets are going to have to do one of two things. They're either going to have to move to Toronto, because the fans won't go out in New York. In the end, New York fans either back winners or martyrs. They do not back losers. Now, the Mets are martyrs right now. They're kind of our gang, you know. You know what I mean by that? They're our gang. Well, they either back that. They'll back that. Now, that's not a true loser. Really isn't. Really is not. A guy who, say, is sitting in a coffee shop down in the village surrounded by admiring fans, and this guy's sitting there suffering, and he's convinced everybody that if it wasn't for rotten society, he would write this unbelievably fantastic book about love, true love, the way love really is, the way human beings really should be. And he, of course, he never writes it. And as long as he has convinced a large number of people that he is on to this, is he a loser? If they're sitting at his feet applauding? Well, no, I don't think he's a true loser, and I don't think the Mets are either. I think the Washington Senators are true losers. The Washington Senators are true losers. You never heard Don Blasingame, you never heard anybody traded to the Senators say, "Oh, boy, it sure is a pleasure to be here at the Senators." You don't see big articles in Sports Illustrated about the new breed following the Senators. You don't see anything like that. And they are really an underdog. This is a true... Nobody talks about the poor, sad Senators and how somebody should do something about them. Nothing. Nobody. They just stay away from the ballpark in droves when the Senators come to town. You know, it's really sad. Well, this is a true loser. A true loser gets no editorials written for him. I have never felt that any group of people or any ball team, any organization that gets editorial support is a loser. He may take the pose of a loser, but he is not a loser. The only true losers are the guys that nobody even notices at all. They just go on losing, that's all. They just go on losing until one day they drop out of the league quietly, leaving no splash, no trace. Now, I think that what's going to happen is that eventually the Mets are either going to have to move to Toronto, because they will become then a true loser the minute they lose that aura of togetherness. As each succeeding Met is traded away of the original gang, there is, as you notice, a slight decrease in interest. Charlie Neal is gone. Marv Throneberry is gone. Go on and name them. Richie Ashburn is gone. One after the other. And the first little indication, and nobody seemed to say much about it, the first little indication came about a week and a half ago when one of the Mets booted one in typical Met fashion. And what did you hear from the stands? They started a boo. It was the first time I've ever heard a Met really booed. And I mean, for real, Ed, for real. They were hollering. And of course, I can imagine this guy comes trotting. It was Crane Pool, as a matter of fact. I can imagine him trotting back, sitting down in the dugout. A new experience has been visited upon the Polo Grounds. Wait, fellas. Wait till you get out to that new stadium. For one thing, the light's going to be better out there, and they can see you better. That's always pretty bad. That's a very bad thing to turn the lights on in a good stadium. And another thing, too, is they're going to be further away, which is going to bug them even more. Just by the mere fact they're 1,400 feet away from the center fielder, you know. He ceases to be a human being. He ceases to be old friendly Jim Hickman and becomes nothing but a dot on the horizon that muffed it. And it's very easy to boo. Have you noticed that the cruelest fans of all are the Yankee fans? The Yankee fans will boo their best ball player. The Yankee fans, believe me, if it wasn't for Roger Maris, the Yankees this year would be playing somewhere in the second division of the American Association. I'm sorry. Look at his record. And yet those chowder heads, every time that guy comes up the bat, he's only hitting over 300, leading him in RBI, leading him in home runs, making sensational one-handed catches out there, holding the outfield together. Why?
Well, because the Yankee Stadium, you're so far away that you feel okay booing a guy. It's hard to boo a guy sitting across the table from you. Have you ever tried to boo somebody in your living room? Seriously, the guy gets up, see, and he starts telling a joke. And he tells it badly. He tells a rotten joke. And you listen to the rotten joke, see. You say, ha, 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 ha. It's very good. Anybody want any more beer? Well, all right, let that same chowderhead get up on the stage of the palace. And you're sitting back in the balcony. He says the same joke. Get him out of the ball! Give him the hook! Same guy. Why? Because he ceases to be a human being and becomes a dot on the horizon that offended you. It is. Oh, this also goes with wars, you know. It goes. Oh, this has many ramifications. It is very easy for a guy who is 4,000 miles away to get angry at a whole country and decide to blow him up. But when you're living in the country, you know a couple of these, it's very difficult. It's very hard to get mad at anybody when you're close to them. It really is. Very, very difficult. And it's almost impossible. Well, the Mets are in for some wild surprises, and so are the Met fans. And they won't even know why they lost interest. You know what they'll say? Oh, the Mets have changed. Not the same. I mean, it's just not the same. You know, they've the whole bunch changed. And, of course, a year or two, and a couple of years, Casey's going to retire. After all, he's 73. And then you're just going to have a ball team out there. And this thing has always been a problem with us, human beings. We don't often know why we like a thing. We don't often know why we're for a thing. I wonder how many people who have really strong opinions about various things in the world, whether it be the Red Chinese. Hey, you know, speaking of the Red Chinese, have you noticed how very little you read in the newspapers about the Red Chinese? Really? You know, it's almost impossible to get anybody even angry about them or worried or concerned or anything about this. That every time you hear the right-wing groups, you know, the really far right-wing crowd, they only talk about Khrushchev or Castro. They don't even do that. They talk about the State Department. That's about all they ever talk about. They never mention Red China. Never mention that. You know that during the late 1930s, and this may seem to be a digression, but it really isn't, because it's connected with that same business of identifying friend and foe, which is part of why you dig the Mets or why you don't. The good guys and the bad guys, and seeing yourself as a good guy, seeing yourself as a protester against the society that is. I don't know what you feel. You know, I think so many of the Met fans, again, the reason I call them, demonstrators, is because really what most of them are against is the establishment of the Yankees, one thing and another. Well, I don't know what they're going to do when the Mets become part of the establishment. You either quit demonstrating for them or you drop off. Or you join the establishment yourself, you know. And a big new stadium and a pennant winner is the establishment. Don't worry about it. I got my eye on it. You just don't worry. So the thing that I'm thinking about in connection with the Red Chinese is the problem that bugged many a person who was involved in international relationships in the late 30s, Ed, do you know that it was impossible to get any interest on the part of the entire North American population in what Japan was doing? Just not interested. Not interested at all. And even to this day, it's difficult to find anybody who is interested in, say, what Japan did in China in the 1930s, which was pretty much, you know. Yes, quite a bit. if you think that the German atrocities were something, and they certainly were, you ought to do a little bit of reading on what the Japanese did in China in the 1930s. You'd make some interesting thoughts about 20th century man. There's nothing to do with race or anything like that. There was a lot of it going on all over the world. Well, I believe that one of the reasons why we cannot identify with the problems of the Orient or the East is because we simply do not have any genuine interest in somebody that is truly different from us. Truly different from us. Different culture, different religions, different structure of mores. Even their faces are different. So I suspect we just move away and think very little about it. And yet, the Russians don't go with this, you know. The Russians right now at this point are deadly afraid of the Chinese. And, of course, everybody assumes this is a great thing. Oh, great, because everybody has been for so long mad at the Russians or worried about the Russians, and they suspect somehow that anybody that's after the Russians is our friend. Well, there is a great body of people who understand that the reason that the Russians and the Chinese have split is over whether or not to use the A-bomb against one's enemies immediately, without any question. So I don't know, you know. And yet you can't get many people. I'm sure a lot of people listening right now to this is, oh, come on, get off of that. Talk about Uncle Carl, will you? Well, it's okay. Speaking of the sinister, the very funny little piece here. Here, I've got it here. Where is it? No, I'll say that. I'll say that for later. But I've seen ball fans, and the reason I'm such a great student of baseball is not because I'm hung on baseball, but because I think when you are in a crowd of people and you watch this crowd react to various incidents and situations that occur, you begin to understand mankind in general. Now there are two studies of psychology that are divergent. One of them is the study of the individual, and that's the one that America's hung on. We're so hung on Freud and psychiatry that we don't even want to notice any other kinds of psychology. Well, one of the most dangerous and one of the most profound studies in psychology is the study of man in mass. Now, you singly are one thing. Put 10 million of you together, and you have a totally different creation that is capable of things that not one of the units within that mass could even conceive of. No one quite knows why this is, that man in his herd is different from man standing around by himself on the street corner. This is one of the reasons why we can't understand the Germans. A lot of people keep saying, well, you know, look at them lying. No, it's you get 63 million people like there was in Germany. This is a mass of people. And they are capable of things that not one of them singularly could have done. And did. They literally did it. Went all the way. This is true of the Chinese. It's true of us. And if you go to a ball game, you begin to see this kind of thing. Irrationality is rampant when you're at a ball game. What seems to be irrational, if you were to take each individual guy, if I were to take a guy and say to him, why are you booing Roger Maris? He is now batting 305. He is leading the team in RBI. He has not said one snotty thing about the Yankees for years. He has just made three sensational one-handed catches. Now, he's sitting next to you in the ballpark, and he's saying, shut up! Maris is a bum! Because everybody out there is doing the same thing. He is carried away by some wild impulse, which in his living room he would never concede. Interesting thing to watch. I have seen ball fans turn in, like, without any reason. You see a situation, and suddenly their whole attitude reverses itself. Do you know that for many years, the Yankee fans, every time he came to bat, booed Mickey Mantle? No, are you aware of that? That's true. They don't want to admit it now. They don't even remember it. I often confront Yankee fans with that. The very Yankee fans who said, Mob Mantle's a bum, they ought to trade that fat slob away, a bum. And they couldn't tell you why. Those same guys are out running around. Let's get a Mickey Mantle day. Now, there's a Yankee. My God, old Mickey, look at him slimping around out there. What a wonderful... It's this fascinating irrationality that is in mob behavior, which causes wars. It causes, for 1 minute, you will be fighting the Japanese and blowing them up. You remember some of those wild songs they had during the war about the Japanese? No. Now it's all forgotten. On the other hand, I remember at the same time these great love things that went on about the Russians. Do you remember that, Ed? Oh, boy, the Russians were the greatest. And suddenly switched over. I keep thinking of Roger Maris. I keep thinking of Mickey Mantle. Why suddenly do they hate us? And so on. Mob. That leads us to make these nutty decisions when people go visit Russia and they will come back and they'll say, you know, the average Russian is a wonderful person. He loves them. He loves the Americans, the average Russian on the street. Well, that is singularly. But in a group, he's another story. You take one Southerner out of a crowd of Southerners in Birmingham, and you'd be surprised at how civilized he is. Put 200,000 of them together, and you got a lynch mob. No one knows. Speaking of strange and exotic attitudes, I would like to suggest to you the Mandarin House. If you haven't tried Mandarin food, I would like to recommend it without reservation. In fact, the more I go there, the more I'm hooked. At last, I've been weaned from Needix. If you haven't been to the Mandarin House, they're on 13th Street between 6th and 7th in the heart of the village. They've got a bar, and it is, in my way of thinking, one of the greatest New York summer restaurants. They got a superb garden, you know, the top goes back, and people sit there and watch the moon and holler and sit and sit. And, you know, I don't know. Do you know any mass psychotherapist? No, really. I think that in 1,000 years or 500 years, there will be mass psychotherapists whose duty it is to treat whole populations. Because that's a very different set of problems than treating one guy whose mother doesn't love him. A mass psychotherapist. I can see him up on a balcony. Now, I want you to start at the very beginning. Start when you were a child. What was the very first thing you remember? Now, all together now. I almost said Metz over Alles.